taking up the sword of Christian theology and the shield of apologetics, while taking truth into the arena of ideas. You are listening to the Bellator Christi podcast, brought to you by BellatorChristi.com. Now join your hosts, Brian Chilton and Curtis Evelo, as we enter into the arena of ideas. Coming to you from Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, and Roland, Montana, we're bringing to you the Word of God today, coming from Psalm 119, verse 105, which says, "Your Word is a lamp for my feet and a light to my path." This is the Word of God. Thanks be to God.
Taking up the sword of Christian theology and the shield of Christian apologetics, while taking the truth into the arena of ideas. This is the Bellator Christi podcast. My name is Curtis Evelo, and I'm joined by Brian Chilton as we answer your most pressing apologetic and theological questions of the day. Well, welcome aboard, everyone. Either school is out or it's just getting out, so take this opportunity to teach your kids about God's natural revelation and His purpose in nature, and how we bring glory to God by enjoying His creation. It's a pleasure and a joy when we get to see the kids connect the dots to what God has done for us, and it's pretty neat to see. So, what we're going to discuss a topic that's involving our star athlete on the Bellator Christi ministry. So, let's go ahead and welcome him aboard. Welcome on, Brian.
Star athlete. Wow. I feel honored.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had to do something.
Well, yep. I wish I could be a star athlete. Unfortunately, I keep either having muscle spasms in my back or pulling a hamstring here lately.
Just happens when we start getting old.
That's all. It's the truth.
So, we're going to be doing on this podcast, we're going to be following your journey, asking questions and poking some thoughts out of you about your journey in your doctorate program, and how far you've gotten. So, let's go ahead and get started with the first one, and let's let our listeners kind of know who is Brian and kind of give a history and brief testimony. Who is Brian Chilton?
That's a great question, Curtis. And, you know, a lot of times as we have a special guest coming up next week, and hopefully we'll have many more through the summer, you know, we often ask our first-time guests to provide their testimony. And I don't know if I've ever given it myself. So it's really interesting. We're living just a few blocks down from actually where I received Christ, which is interesting. We built a house here in Pilot Mountain last year, and more out in the country and on some family land. And just down the street from where my grandpa used to live. And he was a pastor at a little church in a little community called Westfield, North Carolina, a little church called Albion Missionary Baptist Church. And I remember he was preaching a message, and he was an old school preacher. He wasn't polished by any stretch of the imagination, but he was just preaching a message on heaven and talking about how you need to receive Christ to go there. And I remember a good friend of mine named David. He came down and he received Christ that Sunday. And I've been mulling over it. And in fact, I had gone down, it seemed like I remember going down to the altar before, and Grandpa would ask me, he said, "Are you ready to receive the Lord?" And I just never was quite ready. And so, my friend David went down and received Christ, and I was just mulling over it that week and realized that if we both died, then David was going to go to heaven, and I wasn't. And so, I couldn't even make it till the next Sunday. So I was talking to my mom about it. So she drove me over to Grandma and Grandpa's house, just a few blocks from here, from where the studio is. And so I entered their living room, and he led me to the Lord right then and there, just a few blocks up the street. I was a little fella. I can't say I've always been faithful to the Lord, but the Lord's always been faithful to me. And I know I had a crisis of faith in my early 20s, about concerning the resurrection of Jesus and the authenticity of the scripture and whether we can know that the scriptures can be trusted. And I married my wife. She basically told me that if I wanted to be with her, I needed to be in church. So she kept me in church, and so right around 2005, I think it was, went to Lifeway Christian Bookstore in Winston-Salem back when they actually had physical Lifeway Christian bookstores.
That's a dangerous place to be. I mean, look at your bookshelf. I mean, it seems to me like a bookstore might be a dangerous place for you to visit.
It is very dangerous for me to go in there. It used to be just Lifeway. Now it's Barnes & Noble, but it's still dangerous anytime you go into a physical bookstore. But that's why I'm hoping maybe we can get this thing turned into a live podcast where we can have the video and the audio. Yeah. Continue doing the podcast as we're doing it, but have a live feed so you can actually see us in our glory. but anyhow, in 2005, I came across, you know, something just came upon me. I wasn't planning to go to the bookstore that day, but something told me that I needed to go to the bookstore. And I thought to myself, why in the world do I want to go to a bookstore? I haven't been in the bookstore in years. Believe it or not, at that time, I wasn't a big reader. Surprise. So I go in there and I find a few resources from Josh McDowell and Lee Strobel. I found out about two other guys named William Lane Craig and Gary Habermas and the studies that they did. And it's amazing that as I was reading the resources that my mouth dropped open because, you know, I recall watching the History Channel and, you know, some of these guys like John Dominic Croson and many others were saying there's really no good reason for believing the events in the Bible happened. But here you had these early church fathers confirming what the Bible was saying, written early. And you had all these other resources providing reasons to believe. And I thought, well, they didn't say anything about that, you know, on these shows. So anyhow, the Lord worked in my life and brought me back to a stronger faith. And a little bit after that, we were in a little Methodist church at that time, and the pastor, he had to be gone for a few weeks, and he said, won't you fill the pulpit for me? I know you used to preach. And I said, man, I haven't done that in a long time. And so anyhow, I got in the pulpit, and it was like riding a bicycle, you know, felt right back at home. And so some people said, why aren't you preaching? Why aren't you preaching and teaching, you know? And so one thing led to another, and the Lord, you know, provided a way to get back in the ministry. I don't know where this journey is going to lead, what form of ministry it's going to be in the future, but I'm certainly committed to continue proclaiming God's word, even if it's just through Bellator Christian Ministries. And, you know, interestingly, we're reaching an audience larger than what I would be preaching at on most given Sundays anyhow through this
Isn't
means.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is.
I can't believe it. That we get even got one person listen to us, let alone the amount of people that do.
Yeah, and interesting, cool. You know, because the way everything's formatted now, we really don't know how many people are listening. We know that, you know, from the you know responses we get back, we know that at least some people are listening. And I know that we're certainly on a bunch of different podcasts, and I was even told that we were in the top 100 religious podcasts in Australia of all places. Yeah, so
that's so cool. Yeah, who knew?
Who knew? That's right.
Yeah. So why is it that you sought out this level of education that you're journeying on?
Well, one thing, especially in the PhD program, Doctor, and I'm saying this to lead into the further explanation, or the answer that I'm leading to. Dr. Purser tells every person who's looking to begin the PhD program that if you're not called to do it, you don't need to do it. If you're simply looking to have the title doctor in front of your name, that's the wrong reason to seek out that level of education. There's some people out there who just want to who prefer to be called that for whatever reason, and there are many different places that are degree mills out there that if you pay them enough money, they'll give you the title doctor. But if you're really seeking out to follow the will of the Lord and the Lord is calling you to do that, then that's exactly the reason why you should be doing it. And for me, it's a calling. I enjoy getting into the academic, deeper things of the faith. Lord knows that there are many questions out there, and we need to have individuals trained at these higher levels to be able to engage some of these issues. And I really truly believe that we need to have people on the forefront of education and really every avenue of society able to stand against the challenges that we're facing. And I think part of the reason we're in the shape we're in now is the fact that we've lost the focus on what the church actually is. We've lost the focus on who God really is. We've lost the focus on what we're really supposed to be doing as Christians. And we've gotten lazy as individuals, yeah. And as the church, yeah. Quite frankly. You know, Princeton, Yale, Harvard, they all used to be Christian universities that were built mm-hmm. for training and preparing ministers. Mm-hmm. And because certain agendas got in there and because of certain things that happened, the conservative, when I say conservative, I'm not talking political, I'm talking about people who believe in the literal resurrection of Jesus and the authority of Scripture, that kind of lessened through the years. And I'm not saying that there aren't good things coming out of the schools, because there are. There are great individuals who have graduated there. There are great programs there. Not knocking that. But still, looking at people who hold to the authority of Scripture and the literal resurrection of Jesus, it's taken a hit.
That number's dwindling.
Yeah, that number's dwindling. And but it didn't used to be that way. I mean, Jonathan Edwards came from these universities, right. And many others right. came from these universities. So if we get lazy at all levels, if we get lazy and we take our foot off the pedal, that's what happens. I think that's to a large degree why we're in the shape we're in. Now, having said that, I think that there's a place for all of us. I've heard some people say they liken it to the military. You need to have infantry soldiers out there, and Jay Warner Wallace would call this, you know, the $1 apologists, individuals who are studying these issues, but maybe they're not called to the higher levels. But then you also need to have you not only need to have your infantry, you also need to have your officers. And these are individuals mm-hmm. who have some training in the Bible, some individuals who have schooling in this area. But then you also need your special forces, mm-hmm. individuals who are highly trained in certain issues to be able to go out there and really focus in and hone in on certain particular issues. And that's what higher level academics is for. When you go for a doctorate degree, one of the things you need to know is that you're not an expert on everything, but you're an expert on whatever field you're studying in that realm. And so that's why we need doctorates of all categories. We need individuals who are experts on the Old Testament. We need individuals who are experts on the New Testament. We need to have individuals who are experts in philosophy, philosophers, theologians, historians. You name it. We need Christian doctors in science, in the medical field. Mm-hmm. You name it, we need it. Christian mathematicians in higher academics, we need that. So there's a place for everyone, but these are special. These are the elite, like Navy SEALs, Army Rangers. That's what this level is for, to really go after mm-hmm. the fine-tuning aspects of these different areas.
Yeah, You could say street level or million $1 apologists. They need somebody to so that they can ask or poke at to get and help dig up some of the answers that they need. And I think what you're saying is good, and I think we're starting to see a lot of that happen. I'm hearing more and more people actually being called to just study this stuff through, mm-hmm. and actually having that level of education, even for just being able to back their pastors.
Oh, absolutely.
And being able to help be the resource for some of that. Yeah.
Well, I heard on a podcast recently someone say, and I think it was actually Nick Peters who said this, and I think he's absolutely right. He said he's looking to the day that we'll finally have ministers of apologetics in churches. I mean, we have ministers of education. We have senior ministers. We have ministers of education, ministers of executive pastors. But maybe we need to have ministers of apologetics, ministers of philosophy or something like that in our local churches. They're not the lead pastors, but they're experts in this area, and they're the go-to person who can help beef up the pastor's theology and help him if he has any questions that come to mind. If they're youth who are struggling, that can be the go-to person for that. They're not leading the church, but they're the expert on this issue in their church. And what a wonderful thing that would be to have that resource available at our local churches.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great idea to have a minister of apologetics myself.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's interesting you say that because there's been times where I've been just in conversation with people and they're like, well, I heard my pastor say this, and what does that really mean? And so the pastor knows it, but he didn't go into in-depth of this certain subject. And so I was able to, from even just our discussions on the podcast, I was able to refer them back to some of our stuff and be able to kind of firm up what their understanding was of it, and I could actually lead them into some scripture and show them where it was in the Bible and how we work through that. So yeah, I could see what you're talking about there. I think that might actually be a really good ministry level for somebody.
Yeah, and it would take all of us working together here. I mean, it would take the pastor understanding that this minister of apologetics, this person in the church who is an expert on apologetics, he's not trying to take, or he or she's not trying to take the pastor's place. You know, he's not trying to usurp the authority, because this minister of apologetics would need to recognize that the pastor is the shepherd of the flock. But you know, working together, this person special trained in apologetics could be an asset to the pastor. Look up things that maybe he just doesn't have time to do. I mean, because pastoral ministry, you're pulled in 1,000 different directions on any given week. Maybe this guy can look into, or girl can look into these issues and be really a resource for the man of God.
Yeah, that's impressive. So how have you maintained your devotional time and relationship with the Lord through this process?
Well, through ebbs and flows, I'll be honest. I would love to say.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I would love to say that I've been a bastion of devotional excellence, but I would be lying through my teeth if I said that. There are some times where I've had to just look at the verse of the day, to be honest with you, and really kind of just focus and meditate on that verse. What I try to do, though, in my devotional time, as I have time, is I try to use the Book of Common Prayer for my devotional time. Mm-hmm. And each day has a reading from the Old Testament, a reading from the Psalms, a reading from the Gospels, and a reading from other passages in the New Testament. And so I try to stay on target with that, but to be honest, there's some days where things are going so crazy, such a high, fast-paced that I may just get the verse into the day and kind of meditate on that. And then that can actually lead into sometimes some additional study with that passage of Scripture, looking at not only the verse, but in the paragraph and chapter in which it's found. But again, I would love to say that I'm a bastion of excellence when it comes to devotional life, but I can definitely say I can tell a difference in my spiritual walk when I don't have that time as much as with times when I do. But like
I
anything,
think that just goes for anybody.
Oh, sure. But it's sometimes it's just, you know, if it's just a matter of planning your day with God. But again, sometimes, you know, even the best laid plans don't quite come out the way
right.
you'd like for them to.
Right. This isn't one of the questions, but I mean, through that, I'm sure you notice that when you start kind of maybe stepping away from that or dropping off of your time, you know, doubts and questions and things kind of start walking in, just like even a normal person just in their own day-to-day, not a sure. person even pursuing a doctorate or being a pastor.
Yeah, sure. I mean, for me, I'm not going to ever say that I never have doubts. I would never say that because that's just right. not true. I mean, all of us, if we're honest, there are times where we go through seasons of doubt. But I'm not affected with it as much as I once was. For me, my doubts are more like along the areas of why did God allow this to happen? It's not yeah. whether God exists or whether Jesus rose from the dead, but more of the moral questions. Why did God mm-hmm. allow this certain thing to happen as he did? And certain things just don't make sense. Those are the areas that I've been struggling with, you know, the past few years. But one of the biggest things I've seen in my life is when I don't have that time with God, things seem to bother me a little bit more on a day-to-day basis than necessarily yeah. they would when I have that time with God. And I don't know if it's just the time alone with God, with just you and God, and it kind of...
It could be.
There's something about it that kind of centers you, I guess, or balances you out, or kind of, you know, hones you in to the presence of God and takes you away from the daily life. And that might be part of it. I don't know. But there's something about it that's very refreshing when you have that personal time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's days where, you know, it happens. You spend, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes, and then there's days where you might get 3 minutes in, yeah. and you're like, I feel like I gypped God or, you know, whatever, but
yeah, at least totally I know understand. It's not just me then.
Yeah, no. So how important has it been to have solid Christian influences in this journey?
Oh, I think it's been very important. You know, I think it's important to have people you look up to, people you can, you know, check, you know, for answers. But I think it's very important to have a support group as you do something like this.
Sure.
You know, not only to have a support group with your family, because your family needs to be on board. If God's calling you to do higher level education, he's got to call your family to it as well, because, you know, there are times that you're not going to be able to spend with your family as much as you'd want to, because you may have to be in the books reading. You may have papers you have to write. I mean, it's like this past week, you know, I try to allot time to work on the dissertation, but I'll be honest, I mean, this past week there have been days where I haven't been able to work on it as much as I have, either because yeah. of not feeling so well or just spending time with family. And I don't apologize for spending time with family, but, you know, on the weekends there are times where I set aside, and this is just starting dissertation process, but there are days that, you know, times I have to set aside to focus in to really hammer down. Sunday afternoons here as of late have been the times that I've done that, Sunday afternoons. But anyhow, there are times where you're going to have to lock yourself away and really focus in on either the reading or the papers, because it, you know, it can be any school worth its weight in gold is going to have you really do a lot of reading and writing some papers on the material.
Yeah. So this is a good one. How does a person choose a school for that level of education?
That's a good question. One of the things I would say is I think this, to answer this question, is that it really depends on what you're hoping to get out of it. One of the questions you have to ask yourself is, do you want to be eligible to teach with this degree? Now, that comes with a disclaimer. as we were talking before the podcast, we're living in a time right now, at least in the United States, where we have more qualified people to teach than we necessarily have positions available. Sometimes it's networking, sometimes it's knowing the right people, sometimes it's selling yourself and what you have to offer. But a lot of it's going to depend on, too, whether or not your college or university is accredited under appropriate, you know, accreditation. But understand, too, that you're not going to find a perfect school. There are new stories that's come out about my university, Liberty University, but just today, similar things were said about Michigan University as well. Certain things that happened on the football team that went unreported. So it's not just Liberty. It's not, you know, there are many other schools that have issues where things aren't done necessarily appropriately. That doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it right at all.
Right.
But just understand, you're not going to find a perfect school. One of the drawing points for Liberty to me was the fact that I wasn't going to spend out a fortune. I wasn't going to have to buy a house with the amount of money that I was using, you know, to right. take out loans. But and it also was fully accredited. The program I'm in, the PhD in theology and apologetics, is not only accredited with SACS accreditation, but it also recently got accredited with the American Theological Society, which is a very big thing. It's a very big deal. There are different schools that have different focuses. Liberty, by and large, is a non-Calvinist school. So it's not going to emphasize, there are some Calvinist teachers, but even the Calvinist teachers are a very mild form of Calvinist, like what you would find with Norman Geisler, more like Thomistic in that sense. Southern Evangelical Seminary is a hardcore Thomistic school. I mean, if you're not a Thomist, I'm not saying you can't survive there or can't make it through, but you're going to have a tougher time because they are all about some Thomas Aquinas, let me tell you. Biola University is largely Molinist. It's more of a philosophical school, so they emphasize Molinism quite a bit. The Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, they are hardcore Calvinists. They are Baptistic Calvinists. And so Master Seminary in California, they're going to be strong Calvinists. So
yep.
I think part of that as well is to determine the focus that you want to have. DTS, Dallas Theological Seminary, they are highly premillennial. They are highly dispensationalist. That's the word I was looking for. They're highly dispensational. Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, very close to them. A lot of them are dispensationalists, but they're more traditional Baptists in that sense. So every school has a different focus. So choosing the right school for you is going to determine what you want to do with your degree. And secondly, what type of theological soteriology do you want to focus on? Do you want to be trained in Thomistic ways? If so, then you may want to go to SES. If you want to be trained in Molinism, you may want to go to Liberty or to Biola or something of that sort. More so probably Biola. But even still, there are different focal points, and you know, you got to choose what's right for you.
Right.
That was a long answer to the question, but
yeah. Well, you know, and then the next one is, how does a person choose a path in scholastics to get to the Bible doctorate program?
So, what you would need to do if you're looking for the doctoral level, you need to go through. I would recommend either getting a Master of Arts in a highly scholastic area, or I would recommend probably a Master of Arts and a Master of Divinity. Some people now Liberty accepts the Master of Divinity because their Master of Divinity has a lot of credits. So they accept the Master of Divinity to get into the program. Some schools, they want you to have a Master of Arts specializing in certain areas. So a lot of this has to is determined by the school itself. So a good thing that some people do, now I didn't go this route, but some people get the Master in Theology, which is a go-between the Master of Arts, Masters of Divinity, and the PhD. The Master of Divinity, you're going to have a bunch of hours, but if you have a Master of Arts, the Master of Theology may be something you want to do to beef up the amount of credits you have going into the PhD. But one of the things I think is important is to ask yourself, what area do I want to study? Do you want to focus in on philosophy? Do you want to focus in on theology? Do you want to focus in on Old Testament, New Testament? If you're going for Old Testament, you need to have a bunch of Hebrew under your belt. If you're going for New Testament, you need to have, in the master's level, you need to have a bunch of Greek under your belt. So these are things to consider as you're looking to these different programs. Generally speaking, Old Testament, New Testament are the harder programs because there is such an emphasis on Hebrew and Greek. There are a lot of schools looking for, we're living in an oversaturated time, but there are a lot of schools looking for New Testament, Old Testament scholars.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you said you got to have good level in those languages, and those languages in themselves is a long time educational path to get to where you could be going into the doctorate program.
So with the Master of Divinity,
2 or 3 years, isn't it?
Well, for me, in the Master of Divinity program, I took about a year of Greek. I took Beginning Greek 1, Beginning Greek 2. I took, before Beginning Greek 1, I took a Introduction to Greek. I actually took that twice. I took once at Gardner-Webb, the undergraduate, and I took it again at Liberty. And then I took Beginning Greek 1 and 2, which were really more hardcore programs, or hardcore classes. With Hebrew, I took, it seemed like they only offered beginning Hebrew, and it had one section to it, and so I took that, and I took another Hebrew class, so I have about a year, probably a year, maybe a little more than a year in Greek, and about half a year in Hebrew, probably more like half a year in Hebrew. Well, I guess you'd say, maybe with the two semesters, it might be close to a year, but I'll be honest with you, I did better with Greek than I did Hebrew. I like Hebrew. It's just those vowels. They don't have vowels. I mean, so they had to come back later on and add those dots to identify where the vowels are, and sometimes that can be a little tricky.
Yeah, I was just going to ask which one was harder to learn, but I'm going to ask it, which one was harder, is harder to retain?
I would definitely say Hebrew was harder to retain than Greek was. And one of the reasons for that is because in Greek, we have adopted so many words from Greek, it's uncanny. So, for instance, a lot of medical terms are Greek words. So if you go to
the those are Latin.
Well, most of them are Greek. So, for instance, if you have heart problems, you go to a cardiologist. Well, the word cardia in Greek means heart. If you go to an eye doctor, you go to an ophthalmologist. Well, the word ophthos means eye. So, you know, it's the same thing with oncology. I can't remember what word for behind oncology means. I don't know if it means tumor or destructive something. I can't remember off the top of my head, but pneumatology, even in theology, we use these words like pneumos or psychology, coming from the word psyche, meaning mind. So there are all these different terms we're using that very close or really are borrowed from the Greek language. So for me personally, Greek was a whole lot easier. Now, there are a lot of different things in Greek, talking about the different tenses and different genders and things of this nature. I mean, the verbs, everything was hunky-dory till we got to the verbs, and then everything went haywire. The verbs are something else. But yeah, by far, I retained more in Greek than I did Hebrew.
That's crazy. So what are the pitfalls that should be avoided in this journey?
Well, one, you need to ask yourself why you're going for this. I would also recommend individuals to think long and hard before they go to a university where they're going to take out a big loan. If you can get scholarships or you can get something where the cost is cut down. I mean, yeah, I would love to say that I went to a Notre Dame. I'd love to say that I went to a Duke or Harvard or something like that. But here's the thing. A lot of these schools, you're looking at a $60,000 a year price tag on some of these big-name schools. You know, you're looking at a bunch of money. And so you have to really ask yourself the question. You either need to have something coming in some type of scholarship that can help you out or something like that. Because understand this, if you're going Old Testament, New Testament, you're doing something in this area, even the humanities now, with English, the same thing applies with a lot of the degrees in humanities. There may not be a job in education for you when you get done with this, and you may have a student loan of well over $100,000 with some of these universities. So I think you need to think long and hard. If you have a scholarship, that's one thing. If you have some way of doing this where you're not going to be heading over heels in debt, more power to you. But I'm going to tell you what, you know, again, this is a super saturated field right now. And so it's something to consider if you're going to go to a big-name school. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but I think you need to have a game plan and ask yourself, okay, if you're going in to do this to teach, what happens if you don't get that dream job that you hope you do? Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of universities are going to take – I'll be honest. I went to Liberty. A lot of universities are going to take a Notre Dame grad over me because Liberty is a conservative school. But having said that, again, I can say unless my dissertation just goes on for 10 years, which I don't think they'll let me do that anyhow, I shouldn't have a price tag that what someone would have if they went to one of these big Ivy League schools.
Right.
So that's just something you need to keep in the back of your mind. I'm not saying you should go to any particular school or not go to a particular school. I'm just saying that's something you need to consider.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some good stuff. I really never even considered some of the stuff that you're talking about. It's, you know, obviously prices and that kind of stuff do play a factor in the decisions, but my wonder and in awe is the fact that there is so many scholastic programs out there that seem to be reasonable, like what you're describing. I didn't know that. I thought it was going to be, you know, each one of them was going to be that $60,000 price tag. And, you know, that's interesting.
So here's what we're looking at. I just pulled this up. Okay. Average annual cost before student aid. This aid includes grants and scholarships from the institution, state, and federal government. Okay, if you can get grants and scholarships from the institution, you're going to be in better shape. But say you go to a Duke University, okay, if you don't have any grants or scholarships, you're looking at a year, this is just 1 year attending, $77,029. Now, if you can get grants and scholarships, the cost will go down to $23,442. That's for a year, okay? But now understand that most doctorate degrees are going to require you to go 4 years. So 2, 4, 6, 8, that's $80,000 over $80,000 for 4 years. If you go, if you do the master's program, which is going to be, you know, 3 or 4 years on top of that, that's 8 years. Okay, so that's going to be doubled. Okay, that's wow. Even with aid. Okay, and this is at Duke University. Now that's if you do, master's and doctorate there.
Eight years. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So you're looking if it now Master of Arts, you may look at 2 years, but even then, if you do a Master of Theology, you're looking at probably at least 2 or 3 more years on top of that. Then 4 years for most likely for the doctorate degree. 3 or 4 years, depending on how quickly you go through the program. Notre Dame University is about the same. Before student aid, you're looking at an average annual cost of $74,193. After aid, this is grant scholarships from the institution, state and federal government. After aid, you're still looking at $32,096.
Holy buckets.
For 1 year. Woo. For 1 year. So, I mean, again, it's nice to say that you went to some of these big name schools, but the way things are right now, there are not a lot of positions out there available. Now, if you can land, if you're one of the lucky ones that can land a nice position somewhere, teaching somewhere, then, you know, you might be able to pay that off fairly well. But this isn't going to be like a medical field where you're going to automatically enter the medical field knowing that you're going to make a bunch of money. This is just something to keep in the back of your mind. Again, I'm not promoting any particular school, and I'm not saying you shouldn't go there. I mean, maybe you have some wealthy individuals who can help you out with this. You know, well and good. That the name of that school is going to look good, but understand it's going to have a hefty price tag. Now, some people get around this by working for the university while they go through it. That cuts the cost down quite substantially. I don't know what that even looks like, though, at these universities.
Isn't that considered slave labor?
I'll leave that up to interpretation.
yeah, no kidding. Man, just wow. Yeah, so you better make sure that you're called to this.
So here's another article. Here's another article from 2019. For many families, the hardest part of college planning is the finances. College costs are rising rapidly, with the average family paying $56,840 for a four-year degree from a public institution or $104,400 from a private university in 2016. And that's for the, was it undergraduate? Oh, that's just for 4 years. Here again, when you're talking about doctorate and master's and undergraduate, and that's compounded, that's doubled. So if you did this, say you went 8 years from the same institution, that would be $208,000 by the time you got finished with everything, at least.
That's a mortgage. That's buying a house.
It is.
Daggum, man. Jeez. Oh, my goodness.
Again, yeah. You know, I know Liberty has some things that bad press, but still, yeah. You know, I'm not saying
other
you should
university though.
Absolutely, other universities do as well. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't go to any particular university, but this is something you need to consider, especially if you're looking to teach in an area where you may not have a place to teach by the time you get through. You're not guaranteed a position.
Yeah. Well, I was just kind of looking that up while we were talking, and it seems like a lot of the doctorate degrees that people hold are actually being used for just for their credit, for their social credit in when they write a book or when they write things, that kind of stuff. So, but it's not necessarily about teaching, though.
But there again, if you're using it to publish, you know, I published the Layman's Manual on Christian Apologetics and did fairly well. It wasn't a worldwide bestseller. It did fairly well. But you're not going to make a living off what I've got for the book. It's not going to. In fact, J. Warner Wallace, I even spoke to him personally at a conference, and he said, writing Christian books aren't going to make you a millionaire by any stretch of the imagination.
No. But it's the information that's out there that is needed out of those minds. I mean, like Jim Wallace's books, to think through the process of Christianity and the truth of Christianity, the way that he has taught us with his detective work, has actually opened up such great opportunities for that information to actually stay retained in our brains.
Oh, absolutely.
We think of these processes. Yeah.
Most assuredly. So, I have three of his books on my bookshelf behind me. I mean, you know, right. he's a great guy. The point is, though, is that if you go to some of these universities, if you go to the big-name universities, you have to understand that you're not guaranteed a position in academia. Now, some people are getting around this when it comes to the humanities by working in areas of research. Some people, because there are actually industries that are looking for PhDs in the humanities because of the skill set that comes along with this type of degree. There's some businesses looking for people. There's roles in chaplaincy. There's roles in different avenues. Of course, there's some who go on to be pastors, and some larger churches are going to look for individuals who have doctorate degrees and whatnot. There are other avenues out there, but you have to understand, if your sole purpose is for academia, you have to really count the cost and understand that there are, again, more qualified applicants than there are positions. There are not enough positions to go around.
The other thing I was just thinking of when we were talking about this is I remember seeing an ad for doctorate level archaeologists.
Mm-hmm.
The need for that level is astounding right now.
Yeah, and even then, though, I mean, again, I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy. I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to be a realist in this.
Right.
Even with that, and this comes from Dr. Price, who is an archaeologist himself, archaeology is a very expensive task. Okay, you might be the lucky ones to find the Ark of the Covenant or some big thing, which would make you a lot of money.
No, Indiana Jones already did.
He is in a warehouse somewhere in the United States. but having said that, you've got to get grants, you've got to get licensures from the area that you're going to. Like in Israel, you have to get a certain permit from the Israel Antiquity Authorities. You have to work with the landowners there too, which means that if a person owns a land, a family owns a land that is where you're going to dig, you have to work with that family. And sometimes, you know, you may have to sign agreements to say that what you're going to do is not going to be anything that will harm X, Y, or Z. You know, there's a little bit of politics involved in that. So, again, I'm not trying to dissuade anyone from doing anything. I'm not trying to dissuade someone from you know, we need more people called in all levels, as we mentioned at the outset of the podcast. But just be realistic at what you're facing. And I think a lot of times we have this notion that if we get a doctorate degree or if we get some type of degree like this, that we're going to have a lot of notoriety and we're guaranteed this or that. Well, just in all honesty, it may not be the way we think it's going to be.
Right. Well, we kind of almost answered this question, but let's just kind of cover, just maybe give a little specific. What advice would you give to someone entering into or just looking at a doctorate degree?
You know, this may sound like a cliche Christian answer, but it's true. You really need to pray about it. You need to seek God's face in this issue and see what He's leading you to do. And if He's leading you to do it, go for it. Go for it. But one of the things you need to do is to look at the accreditation, look at the school, and see if they're good fits for you. Another thing you've got to take into consideration is, like, for instance, in the PhD in Christian apologetics, in theology and apologetics, it's intensive based, which requires you to actually attend for 1 week during the duration of that course in an in-person class. And I tell everybody, if you can do that, it's a whole lot better than strictly online, because you build friendships that you just cannot build online. Now, we have a good friendship. You know, we're not meeting in person. We're here.
Right.
And I'm not saying that can't be done, but when you have that personal interaction, you're there with one another, you share a meal with one another, you get to know one another, there's just not anything that can really take the place of that. And quite honestly, for ATS accreditation, for instance, at Liberty, the PhD in theology and apologetics has ATS accreditation. The other PhDs in the School of Divinity do not. And the reason is because the theology and apologetics have in-person intensives. So one of the things you've got to take into consideration, can you get the time off of work to go take that week off? Is your family going to support you taking that week off? Some people move. Some people move closer to the universities where they're going to, you know, work on their doctorate degrees.
They can just travel back and forth,
Exactly. But you still have to get the time off from work. So you need to be in a certain type of position that would allow you to have the time off. Again, and I'm not trying to dismiss the other PhDs in the School of Divinity, but the reality is they don't have the same type of accreditation that the theology and apologetics has, and they shouldn't, because as one classmate of mine says, this is a PhD. It's supposed to be hard. It's not supposed to be easy. And he's right. You know, there has to be a little bit of sacrifice that's made for this type of degree. And so you need to count the cost. You need to see whether you have the time that you can devote to it. Also understand that when it comes to this level of studies, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. But as one friend of mine said, he heard Sean McDowell say, get in, get out as quickly as you can, but understand it may take you, get in and get out and give yourself a break. If you don't quite make A pluses all the way through, understand at this level, most people don't. So get in, get out, be easy on yourself, and make time for your family. And understand, again, that even going through it as fast as you can, it's still going to take a few years to get through it. So be patient. You know, it'll take a while.
It's dedication, that's for sure. That's for darn sure.
Absolutely. Well, it's even with the his dissertation. With the dissertation, you know, you're working with a committee. This is the final leg of it. You're working with a committee. Some of the things you propose, they may not be accepted by the committee, so you may have to go back to the drawing board. I mean, that's what happened with me. But I appreciate it, because it's iron sharpening iron. And so, you know, there's going to be a little bit of give and take through the process. Hearing people who've already finished it out, and that's to be expected with something like this.
Yeah, no kidding. Yep. So, what are your hopes for the doctorate after your journey through the school, and through the school is complete, or will it ever be done? I threw that little extra bit in there because I kind of figured, well, that may never be done.
Well, I promised my wife I wasn't going to commit to anything major after this degree's over, because it's been a sacrifice for them as much as it's been for me. Having said that, I may go back and get something to beef up certain areas, but it would be something that wouldn't take a lot of commitment to do. But that's, you know, I want to get through this thing first before I even think about anything like that. But by and large, for me, this is probably going to be the last major thing I do. Again, I may take some courses to beef up on some areas, but this is going to be the last major thing I do. But as far as learning goes, I think for the child of God, that can never end, because we're always on a course learning more each and every day that we live. So so to answer the first question, what do I hope to do after the journey's complete? Well, I'll be honest, you know, I feel that I have a calling to teach. I've had this calling for some time. I can't say that I have taught elementary school as an assistant teacher. I wasn't a primary teacher, but I helped assist the teacher in that level, and I have taught a few things. But one of the biggest problems I'm having right now is just a lack of experience. You know, hopefully something will open to where I can get some experience teaching. But that is the main goal that I have through the program, to teach. But if it doesn't happen, I am fully on board to continuing, teach or not teach. You know, either way, I'm fully on board to continue our teaching here at Bellator Christi. Right. And one of the things I'm really looking forward to after the PhD's over, after the dissertation's over, is to really kind of take a theological topic. I plan to write more books. That's definitely a given. I'm going to plan on writing more books. But one of the things I'd like to do is kind of like what William Lane Craig has been doing the past few years, take a theological topic and really hone in on that and really do some research, maybe write some papers for some journals, academic journals, but to really focus in and hone in on certain topics, and I have more leeway to do that once the dissertation is complete.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. So take a minute here, Brian, because we're just about done. Share the joys of ministry and the journey of your high-level education so far.
Well, you know, week before last, and I share this personal story just to share what has truly been one of the greatest blessings I've had in this journey. Week before last, we were on we were on vacation, and I had a spiritual crisis. It wasn't that I didn't have doubts. It wasn't anything like that. But it was almost like a panic attack, you know, quite honestly, about some things I had read and seen, and it brought back some past hurts that I had. And I asked for prayer online, on social media, that people just remember me in prayer. I had, Curtis, an outpouring of support that I was not anticipating. I had people from fellow classmates from Liberty, professors from Liberty, some currently teaching, some formerly teaching, people from all across the nation who have been in this program contacting me and asking me if I was all right. Saying, hey, man, we're praying for you. Kevin Croyder down close to, in Belgrade, Florida, sent me a text saying, man, I just read your post. Are you okay? Jerry Bogatz called me. He lives in Virginia, originally from Chicago. Great man of God. I'd love to get him on the podcast sometime too. We had an hour-long conversation just asking me how I'm doing, give me some tips to help me along the journey. I had, you know, Scott Hyland, he sent messages, and Stephen Jordan sent messages, Dr. Purser, Dr. Baggett, numerous other professors and students alike sent messages just to make sure I was okay, that they were concerned after reading my post. That, to me, is something that that money can't buy. That, to me, if nothing else comes out of this PhD, then the friendships that I've developed, then it was all worth it. Because I have met some world-class people from all across the globe. We had some individuals in the program from Syria. We had some individuals in the program from Germany. We had some from in Africa. We've had some people from Romania. We've had some people from all over the world who's been in this program, and many of them reaching out saying, hey, we're praying for you. You did the same thing, Curtis. Many others did. Just reaching out saying, hey, I'm praying for you. Just, you know, let me know if there's anything you need. You cannot put a price tag on that.
Right.
That, to me, I mean, I just can't even share how much that blessed me.
Well, it's kind of almost, not to interrupt, but that high level of education and those high level or high profile people that you just talked about, and they're still at a human level.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not above it, you know?
Because they've been there. You know, Dr. Habermas, he's teaching a course. Excuse me. I wish I could have took it or audited it, but it's a class on doubt. And he's very vulnerable in the classes he teaches to tell about what happened when his wife died, his first wife died, mm-hmm. and about the doubts he had. I mean, and these interactions, right. I mean, that's why I say if you can do an intensive-based yeah. program like the Theology and Apologetics, that's the way to go, because you're there.
That makes sense.
You're there. You see each other. You know, and one day we're going to do this, Curtis. Either I'm going to come to Montana, yeah. you're going to come to North Carolina. One day we're going to meet in person.
Yeah,
and we'll have that experience where we eat yeah. supper yeah. and just a fellowship one-on-one. And, mm. you know, many times when we went to a local, you know, Chinese restaurant, which was an experience in and of itself. Nice, a great restaurant. But many other places there in town, we would sit and eat, just have a cup of coffee, maybe go to the library. All these different things we did together. And that's something that, again, you can't put a price tag on that.
Yeah, you build those friendships. That's cool.
And you don't know where the people you in class with are going to be. You know, some... you never know. Some are already teaching at different places.
Right.
Some have apologetic ministries that they have ongoing, and some are speakers, some are teachers, some are pastors. You know, just from all across. You don't never know the people you're sitting next to, what God's going to do with them,
right.
and it's exciting to
Pretty
see.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. Well. It's been a good podcast, and I've enjoyed discussing this with you, and I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed hearing this. So we here at Bellator Christi want to thank you for spending that time together with us, and we value that time. Our prayers that this podcast helps stretch your mind and is a place to strengthen your faith as we strive to create an atmosphere of discussion and as a reliable source of information. Join us next time on the Bellator Christi podcast. And until next time, Brian and I say,
so you're on, friends. Been listening to the Bellator Christi podcast, brought to you by BellatorChristi.com. The opinions of our guests represent their own and may not reflect those of Bellator Christi Ministries or its affiliates. The Bellator Christi podcast and BellatorChristi.com are protected under Creative Commons copyright, all rights reserved. The opening theme is the song Crucified, written by John and Michaela Limanis, performed by Crosby Lane and produced by Mansion Entertainment. Be sure to visit our YouTube page at www.youtube.com/Bellator Christi. Also, please consider leaving a positive review on the apps where this podcast is found. We thank you for joining us today and hope to see you back the next time that we step into the arena of ideas. Do you have a question about the Bible, theology, or apologetics that you've always wanted to ask but never felt comfortable asking? If so, we want to encourage you to head over to BellatorChristi.com and submit your question on the Submit a Question link. Your question will be reviewed and may be featured on a future article or podcast. Remember, the only dumb question is the one unasked. So go over to BellatorChristi.com now and submit your question. Have you ever wondered about the Christian faith but have become bogged down by difficult terminology? Are you a Christian and faced doubts and you didn't know where to turn? Maybe your faith has been challenged and you don't know how to respond. Or perhaps you desire to learn more about how to winsomely defend your faith, but you do not have the time nor the finances to enroll in seminary. If any of these situations describes you, then consider purchasing a copy of the Layman's Manual on Christian Apologetics. This book confronts the challenges facing the Christian faith, but does so in a way that is accessible to everyone. The Layman's Manual on Christian Apologetics is available in softcover, hardcover, on the Kindle, and Nook. Consider purchasing a copy of the Layman's Manual on Christian Apologetics from your favorite bookstore today.